Yep, welcome to Roots of the Right. We're a podcast reviewing the cultural works that have led us here and might just lead us forward through this shit. So in this episode, we're reviewing Harassment Architecture, and it's by the enigmatic ex-Vine superstar, proponent of the named terror organization Pine Tree Gang, and one of the few blue checks to be scrubbed from Twitter.com, Mike Marr. So this is a shorter work from a first-time author who moved amongst the milieu of the early alt-right, rubbing shoulders with Milo, later writing for Breitbart, and then undergoing what he calls a spiritual death of sorts to produce this obscure and accelerationist screed. So my code name for the coming collapse is Thumos, and on this episode, I'm joined by the Antipodean tomato-growing machine. It's Mick. What's up, Mick?
God. Jesus.
You
should have let me know about that. That was pretty funny. Thanks. I'm good, thank you.
Yeah, every now and then it hits, man. So the third foot on the gas pedal is none other than Bronzo. G'day, mate.
G'day, fellas. How we doing?
Good. How's your mic?
Yeah, I think we got that all sorted. We're ready to go. We're not here to fuck spiders.
We're not here to fornicate arachnids.
Certainly not.
Another regular, the man with a wit drier than a Corona coof, it's Damok. How's it going, mate?
Evening, everyone.
Very cool. And rejoining us is the infamous streaming wonder from down under, Ozzy Mozzy. Good to see you, mate.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back, Oz.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. And last but absolutely not least, we are also hoping to be joined by the host of White Talk Radio. He's the DJ for The Coming Collapse. He's the thinking man's Alex Jones, Mr. White Tuber. So I suppose we'll push on while we wait for the celebrity guest. But so to get us kicked off, what about your overall takes, fellas? What did you think of the book? Let's go from Mick, I reckon.
I mean, I only just finished it 25 minutes prior to doing this stream, so it's fresh in my mind. And I think Damok kind of accurately sums it up when he says spicy.
Yeah.
It is very, very, very spicy book, I have to say. It's a good read, though. I mean, it's only 140 pages long, so you can knock it over in an afternoon. It takes you back, that's for sure.
Yeah. And how about you, Bronzo? You got through the book a while ago, didn't you? You've read it before.
Yeah, I read it maybe a couple of months ago, kind of end of last year. It was pretty soon after, actually, I'm not going to say it's pretty soon after it came out because I'm not 100% sure that that's actually true. I think it came out a bit before it, but I read it on a drive up to Sydney.
Right.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. I gave it a quick flick through again before the episode, but I didn't go cover to cover studying because I thought I don't really think that's the right way to read it, but yeah, great book, enjoyable, one of the best reads I've had in a long time. You know, it's just fun.
Yeah, it is. If you go into it with I suppose you know, the right kind of mindset or even the wrong kind of mindset, there's something for everyone in this book. Damok, super keen to hear your takes, the king of the one-liner. How was it?
I really enjoyed it. It was as Mick said, it is spicy. He opens the thing with a warning, essentially, that the book is set in Minecraft. Really tells you where this is going.
Yeah.
I'm saying, but Bronzo, I think I actually read this shortly after we recorded our Evola episode, if I remember right.
And yeah, at the same time I read it.
Yeah,
that's how you know you're in for a wild ride when the opening and closing comments of this book was like, a reminder that it all is in Minecraft.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually reflect the views of the person authoring, publishing, or editing the novel itself, or the book itself, rather.
Or the person whose house you find it in after it was partially burned down and they've been arrested. That kind of thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Ozzy, how's the book?
Yeah, I thought it was great. For some reason, I thought that this book was around a lot longer than it actually was.
I thought that too.
For some reason, I had a feeling that I bought it legally from a bookstore quite a while before all of the stuff that he was referencing. So I'd started reading it a little while ago and then kind of put it down because the copy I had was pretty shit. But it was printed bad, let's say that.
Okay. Oh, yeah, scanned in bad.
Yeah. Something about the printing producer or something.
Yeah.
But wow, he's printing all these extra lines around the edge of the page. What a shit-looking border.
it's making me
sick. I think Mike Marr would probably advocate for you to, you know, steal it anyway, just to buck the system.
Yeah, probably.
What a benefit there on its collapse or something, you know.
So. He actually does say that in his second... Well, he hints at it in his second warning where he says... If you came here expecting coherent plot or structure, you bought or stole the wrong book.
Yeah. Well, confirmed he knew about it.
Well, okay. Well, anyway, since I downloaded this off the internet, reason I thought that it was made ages ago, and then actually sitting down and reading through it, it was very resonated with me pretty hard with a lot of the different themes, not just like the Fed posting, but as well. A lot of the different stuff that he was referencing seemed like it was, I don't know, just for some reason I thought it was written 5, 10 longer years ago.
Right.
And then I was reading it and I was like, oh, wait, this is still like pretty relevant and even more relevant in the that we're in at the moment.
Yeah, I thought it was very kind of current year, and I actually, it's one of the only, well, it's the only book that we've read so far where I've been flicking through it and thinking, there's some shit in here I'm too kind of old to relate to. Like, it's part of a zeitgeist that I wasn't a part of, you know?
Mm.
It's part of an overall feeling that I don't know.
Very online.
Yeah, extremely online. Yeah, I'd say online.
The same thing about Franson's book that we're probably going to do in the future as well. We might find that be the case, but...
We just had Socks drop in the chat that harassment architecture is Gen Z's Fight Club. I reckon that's pretty bang on.
I was going to say that, because I read the book Fight Club quite a while ago.
Well, you read books?
It's kind of...
No,
nah, not really. This is actually the first book I've written. The first book I have done in my brain for quite a while, and I'm glad that it was like one of the first that I've picked up because it was relevant. It was something easy to read, and I could really identify with certain aspects of it. But it's kind of like if Fight Club was like a massive long blog post or something, like, or if it was just like just written out sporadically.
Yeah. I found it to be kind of an absurdist. It was deliberately like obtuse and hard to follow, obfuscated, you know, but it still had this sort of clearly identifiable, insightly, if not disjointed analysis of living through the throes of postmodernism and nihilism and ironic bullshit and late stage of liberalism as a 20-something white male. I think it's also, you know, Mike Myers on the west coast of the States. So I don't know if that means anything. So it's the book itself is rife with redaction marks. So there's plenty of black blocks, truncated sentences. I found it was like a really jarring but really entertaining read. It was surreal. I got a lot out of it. But a fun game to play as well is you can go through and try and like just maybe take a pencil or whatever or print it out and just fill in the black boxes for yourself. It's a good game that I was playing. And there are a few interesting neologisms or like made up words that he puts in, and his phrasing and punctuation, or most often like lack thereof, was interesting, I thought. But yeah, some of his words were like lower world, hell time, crime maxing, which is similar to BAPS looks maxing. I really... Well, that was
ultra
cool.
Terrorism. I don't know.
Yeah, ultra terrorism. And food poison. So they're all pretty cool, but very clear influence of Bronze Age pervert throughout, or vice versa. I don't know. Maybe they're the same person. You decide.
He sort of went. He got here, but he came here from being a Breitbart writer who hangs out with Milo Yiannopoulos. So
yeah.
It has me wondering what's going to happen when Ben Shapiro puts on the skull mask.
That's true.
Yeah, that's definitely something I'd pay for. I wouldn't just download that as a PDF. That's great.
Yeah, I'd pay for that. Pay for that in Birch Gold. www.birchgold.com.
I think the last article he wrote for Breitbart was in 2017, so there might be some sort of political evolutions going on within this character.
Well, I think it probably...
I think even when he was that broad, but he was writing just what you would expect, though.
Yeah.
And that's probably perhaps why that was his last article, is like, he's been the same character for like a long time. I think he actually kind of blew up on, what was that thing that was like Vine?
Vine, yeah, Vine.
He was, on,
yeah.
He was big on Vine.
Yeah, and, he was huge on Vine, yeah.
Yeah, so he's kind of always been the same character. Of course, there's some evolution, but...
He's my first big brain take as well for, you know, getting into the review proper. I reckon this book and Mike Marr's, you know, biography kind of mirrors the story that a lot of guys in our thing might have had coming through sort of mainstream conservatism or 2016 and the, you know, Trump train or whatever, and then realizing how much of a kind of a nothing burger that all turned out to be. And going forward, and there was such an energy and an excitement with Meme Magic, and now it's all what happened, you know? What we're left standing in is what Mike Myers screaming at now.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know.
It's sort of like you've jumped from, you know, back then being, taking it all seriously to having the veil lifted and realizing that you're in a downward pointed earth of nothing burgers.
Yeah.
Mike Myerism there, which I like.
Yeah, downward pointed earth is good. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a bit misanthropic, I thought.
Just a touch. But there was this irreverence that I think is missing, and a sense of humour. Edward Dutton was on a great podcast, The Absolute State of Britain, recently, talking about the fact that one of the things that characterise the left and progressives in general is that they don't have a sense of humour because it threatens their control over the narrative. Mm. And I think that people on the right can fall into the same trap, and we should really be aware of that. That you can still have a laugh about these things. And in fact, mockery is one of the most powerful... Well, satirizing this shit is one of the most powerful ways to kind of take some control back in your own mind.
He's sort of, in his framing method of it, it does show self-awareness, and that is, you know, he's not one-sided about where he's dropping the satire either.
Mm,
it's just a black comedy.
It sort of starts off like you're reading his Unabomber manifesto, but as you go through, he starts to drop in anecdotes as well, so it's not entirely like the Pine Tree Gang version of Siege or anything.
Yeah.
He'll slowly drop in bits about, he's got an ongoing plot line about how he's got sleep deprivation happening and he's bizarre and long and specific dreams and hallucinations.
And that sort of blends
to the point where at the end, it seems like he's waking up and you're getting a mix of his dreams and what this character, which is maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah. That almost starts at the very beginning as well. Well, when he's talking about being able to slip into being lucid and dreamlike, and like thinking about all these things that I'm sure that most people that have had like a terrible 9-to-5 job have thought about, where you would just be like, hey, maybe if I do this, and then you're kind of shocked at the thought of thinking about something so retarded or kind of like out there.
Mm.
But it starts off with this kind of lucid dreamlike kind of thing, and then throughout the book it gets more and more intense as you see, maybe he's sleep deprived, maybe he's dreaming, maybe he's awake, and maybe that's how he's gotten away with so much of the intense shit that he's put throughout the book.
Yeah, well, he's very characteristic of like the new young generation, you know, Gen Z and even Generation Alpha coming up. He really characterizes a lot of their traits in like his ironic approach to topics and like the sporadic, like almost if you're not in the loop with what he's talking about, it might seem somewhat insane. You look at some of the memes that come out that are being shared by young guys, and like we might understand them by being in those circles, but someone slightly older, like Thumos, you said even you were getting slightly lost in some of it.
Now he gets to laugh at you and call you a boomer.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in one of the sections he is talking about, I think it was one of the ones he, just to clarify, one of the things he does here is he marks the chapters he thinks are especially important with a little X in the chapter.
Yeah.
One of them was about the falling of art and the loss of beauty, but when he gets to what an artist is, one of the things he says is in the loop, or they just get it.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's going for here. He intentionally tries to make it a bit of an insider book.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly.
You get it or you don't. Like, if you don't get it, you don't get it. That's
One of the other things that I've found, I think, might interest some other people too, is that he does use, like, we've talked about the language a little bit as well, but there's also, it's like I said, it's sort of deliberately I don't want to say confusing, but it deliberately kind of, you're always on edge, I suppose, mentally. You're always kind of trying to second guess what he could mean or that sort of stuff. Or maybe that was just me being the boomer reading the book.
Well, he starts off certain chapters about like going into a store and doing something highly illegal or something like that. And then it shifts into like an everyday thing. And it's kind of that always changing in between, you don't know whether he's talking in real life or whether he's talking in metaphors or
metaphor. Yeah. I'd say there's probably there's sections of this book that took him longer to write than others. And I can just imagine, like, when he's talking about Atlantis or something, I thought that was like, this is very, this requires 100% of my CPU brain power to process what's going on here.
Yeah.
Based his work on the Atlantis question.
Those are
hey, to Treader in the chat, by the way. How you doing?
Ah, nice. Yeah,
thanks for the follow.
We've got the section titles for this book too were amazing. I took down a quick selection. Eagles descending upon Capistrano with tongues like wilted flowers forever, and spirit that is certain of itself, morality, 364. That was pretty good. And the classic, and this is probably my favorite section title, I think DeMarc and I talked about this, bad attitude at gym, want to say the N-word out loud.
It was one of my favorites as well.
Can I read you my absolute favorite from this?
Do it.
I am the aesthete. I am the ethicist. I am the alpha and omega. I am war and peace. I am yin and yang. I am calling girls fat on the internet. Yeah, that's the number one for me.
Massive fan of the amount of women hate in this book.
I was going to say, he's like really, he really goes of women. It was a tough part, I suppose, of the book, but I guess that's part of the zeitgeist I maybe don't really get, because I didn't have to do the whole fucking dating hellscape that you pricks have to put up with. I suppose, like, maybe,
there was also a part later in the book where he starts describing love and kind of going into like a more romanticist sort of feeling of it. But yeah, for the most part, it was like redacted thoughts, redacted women, redacted this.
I'm
going to say it's not actually, like, that's not him softening. That's actually a thing that tons of guys who do the whole women hate is a strong bit thing that will occasionally just go, you know what, falling in love would be really good. Then they're straight back to it, which, that's accurate. He actually captured that.
Yeah, that's probably the thing I don't or didn't kind of get, rather. So, yeah, that's interesting.
I think because he does want to feel love and fall in love, but, you know, his options are all women.
And as he says, you know, when you're with a woman, you are alone.
Exactly.
The other thing is, he really fucking hated golf clothes and like golf attire. I don't know if that's a US thing.
He hated that bloke at Applebee's trying to have dinner with his family.
And he hates the type of shirt that many shirt manufacturers see is that that comes in the standard blue color.
Retard blue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Retard, yeah.
I sat there for a while after that thinking, I wonder what shade retard blue is. And the one that I pictured was that shade that you can buy on the websites next to the like pastel pink and the bottle green,
yeah,
kind of pale like green a, thing. It's like that inoffensive pale blue.
Yeah, it's like a almost like a baby blue, but not
like, yeah, like a tablecloth blue.
Yeah,
I don't think that's the color he meant because he's he wears that color all the time.
Maybe he's being ironic.
Yeah, maybe it was like a cheeky cell phone.
I think he was talking about that navy kind of color.
Ah, okay.
That would probably make more sense because that doesn't look good with anything.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know because I've got a number of pale blue shirts and just assumed I got fucking owned by that chapter. I was looking at Wardrobe Mac the book. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm not cool anymore.
Oh, wow.
That might have been his intention.
Yeah. I got some choice quotes as well, too, from it. I mean, you had the the great section title, Bronze. My one was this one just by itself, you know, bumper sticker. Obviously, there's the accelerate the world, decelerate your tribe. To be strong is to be on the right side of history. And sort of longer quote from it. And we're not going to be able to give chapter and verse for this shit because that's not the way the book works. Just go and read the whole thing. It's short. You'll get through it. And you'll see where we're getting these quotes from. So this one was...
Sorry, go on.
No, you're right. Was we were born too late. Too late to see the sun set behind massive pillars of stone and marble. Too late to see the greatest warriors of all time. Too late to feel the chilling uncertainty of how the world truly was, how the world truly came to be. Too late to set sail among oceans that promised either untold findings or a watery grave. Too late to live as intended. That one hit me right where I live. I just thought,
yeah,
Atlantis,
recurring...
Agartha, Hollow Earth,
Hyperborea,
take us there,
Lemuria,
Valhalla,
or just you know, England, like circa 1820, maybe.
Yeah, fucking England.
Anywhere, you know, fuck it, Australia, 1910. You know?
Oh yeah, the working man's paradise.
Absolutely, that's what we had something beyond beautiful. I was looking into the backstory of a building the other day because that's the kind of cool shit I do. You know, I have heaps of friends. Shut up. But so this building in Melbourne, it's got a history that goes back, you know, 70, 80, 90 years, and now it's got a KFC on the bottom floor, and that's all that people ever look at, obviously. But you know, this thing's been just a monument, and it was built by a you know, a particular society with a long and storied history in Australia. And now it's just, where people get tendies. Yeah.
I've probably been to that KFC several times. I fucking love KFC.
There you go.
There are worse things in the modern world than dispensing tendies. I think my ma might actually, he might disagree. He's not a big fan.
Yeah, he doesn't like tendies very much from what I read.
There was something that...
But there are...
Yeah.
That's something that resonated with me because I kind of was finishing up the book today and just going through and highlighting certain things. And I chose to, instead of having like a proper dinner, I heated up one of my $12 gym meal, like buff, eat good meals.
It was just like a McCain man size thing.
It was like meant to be healthy or whatever. I heat it up and I'm like, oh, it's too hot in this like plastic container or whatever. So I pour it out into a bowl that I would normally eat like a regular meal in, and it's this tiny portion that I've paid $12 for. And I probably could have, like, they've probably like, it probably costs like a dollar for them to make it. With the packaging and everything, and I've just gone fuck. Like after reading all of that and like, you know, like, oh yes, the eat raw meat, garlic, and all this.
Yeah, unpasteurized milk, and you're like, fuck, it was true. Yeah.
How many seagulls were in it?
All of them.
One meal closer to being a cat boy.
Yeah,
I think
so. Cowboy with supple skin and breasts.
You can plug your OnlyFans as well in the chat if you want, Ozzy. It's all right.
Yeah, I haven't created it yet. I need
we support our boys' OnlyFans.
Yeah, no. Idubs and Mrs. would be posting her OnlyFans in the chat right now if she was here. But
Now what a that it, some of the screenshots from that have been coming out. What a digression! Go and look that up. for a cheap laugh and to see what we're talking about.
We're doing a sporadic episode, so I don't feel bad bringing this up. Did any of you guys see the video that he did, the video response he did to it?
Yeah. Did you see Franzen's? I saw that video came out, and then Franzen brought out a video like not even, I don't know, 5 hours later, and he was... I watched that rather than watching iDubbbz's video.
I instantly thought of like the Kuma meme straight away.
Yeah, and he was just like... This guy's such a Kuma, like he just lives in this Kuma castle.
Yeah.
And like, he's just, yeah.
Not to mention that his girlfriend has no torso. It's like her hips fuse straight to her shoulders.
She's got that
imagine
Celtic.
Becoming
she's like that.
For that.
She's that picture of Chloe Moretz with the disgusted brown guy in the background, and she looks like a fridge. You know the one?
I haven't seen that.
Oh, I'll send it to you later in chat. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, there's so much a bit out bridge, just arms, legs, and her head.
Yeah, looks like a Calvinator.
So she's got like the, she's got like a ectomorph kind of, or endomorph kind of shape, does she?
Yeah. I don't know, she's like male. Mesomorph, I think.
Male endomorph.
Calvomorph.
anyway, Calvomorph. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, back to the Calvomorph. The next, big brain take or the next thing that I had.
Sorry, what you started off with as well on that first take as well was something I highlighted. If history is written by the victors, then it was edited and published by whoever funded them.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, absolutely. He talks about the fact that there's a whole section in the book, and I'll leave it for people to find, but... where he talks about the fact that history is written by largely those people who were, there afterwards to make it up. And they all had agendas and they all had, causes of their own. And so many things that we read and we look at now are so far away from, even within modern history, perhaps, are so far away from the truth of the matter. I don't know if you got the same thing.
Yeah, I think I heard it. It was history is written by the victor, but Mike Marr expands on that by saying that it's people with interests that edited history for him, that funded the victor, essentially.
Yeah.
The past and how we see it is a huge running theme through the book.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's got heaps of passages where he talks about how everything was much better back then, but he's quite clearly picking and mixing his ancient history. Yeah. Like the society he's talking about is mostly ancient Greece, but he drops in a few elements from Rome and nomads. And he's not wrong, but it's as much the image of the future or past you're going for as much as what actually happened. And he foreshadows that a bit very early on when he breaks up one of his monologues on how shit New York is with a little bit about the 1990s. About how the 90s, as he's talking about it, wasn't the years from 90 to 1999. It's the image he as a Zoomer would have of it from probably being able to remember the tail bit of 1999.
Yeah. I actually highlighted that bit as well, and that kind of resonates with me being probably around the same age, a bit older, where I like to remember the 90s as nostalgic, whereas if I was to go back to the 90s and look at it from like...
It would just be as depressing as today.
It's just the same kind of depression. he's filled it with like, skateboarding along the beach and going for bike rides, and there wasn't this and there wasn't that. And how he's saying that... you can't take our vision of the 90s away, even though it's not correct. That's our vision. And I guess it's the same as the whole 60s sort of thing. Like, I bet the 60s was fucking terrible. But people that look back on the 60s were probably like, yeah, man, it was like love and peace and we had to do this. And it's like the...
At least they didn't have encroaching diversity that we do now. It's white flight and that sort of thing. It was like you could have... have a pretty comfortable upbringing in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't have encroaching diversity. They caused encroaching diversity.
Yeah, they caused encroaching diversity. Yeah. Encroaching darkness is probably a more apt term.
Yeah. You can take the whole, the further back you go, the bigger your brain thing is, and just apply it here. Because I reckon he's actually hinting that he's doing sort of the same thing, but with ancient Greece mostly, but the other ancient societies too. In that, yeah, in a downward pointing earth, which is spiraling down, going back is always better. And the further back you go, the better on a downward pointed earth. But we're just as much reaching for our own vision of what it was like, and the importance of having a vision of a better past, as it is what actually factually happened then.
Yeah, the other big brain take that I had from it was when I was reading through it and reading the whole thing, and there's those sections where it does, you know, diverge into this kind of hyper-realism and dreamlike scapes of ultra-violence. And that coupled with the, you know, the feeling of the whole book and the way that it's put forward reminded me of A Clockwork Orange. And the sort of use of that ultra-violence and the jarring language and the confusing linguistics. I don't know if you've read the book of A Clockwork Orange, but it does the same thing, if not more so. But I felt like this is maybe A Clockwork Orange for sort of the post-irony generation, like Gen Z. Because it's shot through with this sense of nihilism, this sense of, you know, nothing that he's talking about actually really could mean anything because it may or may not be real at all. So I thought that this is probably the book that Alex from A Clockwork Orange's grandson might write, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like Mike Myers, the spiritual successor for Gen Z, whereas A Clockwork Orange was kind of more the, you know, 60s devolving into the 70s take.
Yeah, that is an interesting take on it, because when I was reading it, I was thinking, like, yeah, he's just doing the same thing as Zoomers, just posting about, you know, about denying human rights, or, you know, sort of like Zizek last episode, just going, yeah, Hitler wasn't that bad. In fact, he wasn't bad enough.
Yeah.
Like, that sort of thing, but longer and more literary.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I bet that Zizek sort of parrots the whole Holocaust narrative thing and doesn't think that that was bad enough.
Well,
there was a lack of quotes from Zizek on the Holocaust in that book, not that it actually came up outside of like once or twice.
Wow, was it based, or am I a Zizek follower now?
Do I love
the truth is you've been a Zizek names. Follower all along.
Facts.
I mean, Evelyn would posit so, probably.
But that's, he does true.
Yeah.
We are, you did say this early, like, it is full of irony, and then, like, am I taking myself seriously? I don't care. Am I pretentious? Am I being this? Am I being that? But he stuck it out for me, was, like, yeah, nihilism and irony is really cool until you die alone and the only person that remembers you is your weed dealer.
Yeah, that was... He's able to get right between the scales of modernity with shit like that. It's so good.
Yeah, like at one minute it'll be like poetic and you'll be reading this thing that's like a long spiel about ancient Rome or nature and stuff like that. And then he's like, the future is fire. The future is gay cops on fire.
Oh, yeah. I've got that.
That section made me laugh so hard. Especially that is like, you know, it's leading up to something, and then he just says, "Yeah, it's gay cops on fire."
Yeah.
Just cracked up.
The full quote of that is incredible. If I've got the same one,
have you got it handy?
Yeah, it's in a section called "Before the Future Gets Too Low."
Yeah,
I thought it was just poetic and absolutely hilarious. Yeah, so he says, "The future isn't world peace. The future is a spiteful co-worker deepfaking videos of you masturbating on the clock. It's the microchip in your arm accidentally overheating because your cat called the airport trash robot. It's your parents being buried in the cloud courtesy of Google TM. It's your children asking why restaurant menus aren't touchscreen. It's your grandparents asking why your children are such retards. It's your grandchildren being diagnosed as gay in the womb. It's your jewel not working because you put too many apps on it. It's Jeff Bezos giving 2-day free shipping on a pile of wet dicks with which to go fuck yourself. Forever and eternally. The future is gay cops on fire.
That just resonates because I can see that happening. Like, it's so.
I had my mic muted, but I was laughing the whole time.
It's like absurd, but it's almost realistic.
I think that may need to be the new like show opening clip. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah,
I was kind of relevant to that only in its first line. But did you guys image in the book like a text over it that says, "The year is 2059 and racism is illegal. It's illegal, but I still get off on it. I need it." It goes to the chop house. I send my compliments to the chef. I can see from afar he's black. My compliments were the N-word. The hairs of my arm stand.
Oh, that's fantastic. So yeah, go on.
Yeah, sorry. I was just going to say, yeah, this is a really enjoyable book to get back into reading with. Like, if we had started off with, like...
Evola, for example.
Yeah, or Ulysses or whatever it's called. Like, I would have been like, fuck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is very on point, very current year. And, yeah, it resonated. Even when he was talking about God in the kind of abstract way, like... I consider myself like a pretty shitty Christian, but yeah, shitty Christian.
I'm a shitty Christian too.
Shitty chicken. but the way he kind of describes it, paragraphs is the way that I kind of think about it. Like, it's points that or not, but the way it's just like kind of. There's something above us that we should be obtaining to and striving for, and yet we're covering the world with
Walmarts
and all that sort of thing. Shops. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the more interesting sections they had there was, I believe it was on honest work.
Yeah.
Where he makes the case that doing an honest work and having a salary isn't a good idea because the world's corrupt, so go right ahead and steal shit.
Yeah, this particular section got me thinking, like, just a lot about a regular, you know, Joe Sixpack tradies, right? And they just do day in, day out work that would, you know, appear on the outside to be rather wholesome, right? They're building shit, essentially. But, like, Mark says in this book, basically, they're just erecting Walmarts for their brown third world hordes to come and, you know, do shopping. And
then 7 months later, it's shut down.
So, yeah, exactly. It becomes just a drug den or something to that effect. Bad. Very misanthropic, but, you know, eye-opening nonetheless.
It makes a fair point that, well, scamming and stealing to stop the spread of eternal Walmarts is fair. So just, I reckon the most noble based on this profession is actually Silicon Valley con man. Whoever made the Juicero, actually a hero.
Oh, fuck. Oh. Do you want to just explain what that is if anybody maybe doesn't know? Because
I'm out of the loop.
I've followed some of the Silicon Valley bullshit as well, like Theranos and a few other, you know, big fucking white elephants. But yeah, tell people about Juicero. What was this? Oh.
It was a few $100 machine, and I think it was a few, like, tens or dozens of dollars per pack. But basically, it was just a machine with a juice pack that squeezes your juice pack out for you.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember.
So they were claiming it has a crushing force of 4 tons. That's the only thing that can open the juice pack. But apparently you could just squish it and it'd work. And also the juice inside the pack wasn't much better than anyone else's.
It's because every prick in the office where they came up with this fucking thing has the grip strength of, like, you know, a baby rabbit. So they sort of took this thing and they were like, oh, well, I can't get the juice out of it. So, I don't know, just pick a number. Oh, 4 tons. That's how much going to take. 4 tons. Yeah,
better and hydraulic press just specifically for this juice pack.
That's it. Because you can't possibly open your own popper, you fucking neat. Anyway.
Wasn't it always connected to the internet as well?
Yes.
Is that the same thing that I'm thinking
it was
of?
It was a juice box squeezing machine that was connected. Like, it was always online.
That's the ultimate. That's like end capitalism. It's perfect. I love it because it's so stupid. And all of the celebrities, like Katy Perry, was going on about this juicer thing, and it's basically you put a juice bag into this machine and it squirts juice out. Like you could get the same effect by punching a straw through it and using it like a Capri Sun.
You could just buy a bottle of juice and pour it into a glass.
Yeah. while there, fucking big brain. How do you get the bottle open?
That's true.
How do you get
the modern world? And,
how many jobs are you creating with that? Fucking opening your own bottle.
You might need to use a foot wrench or something like that to get it open.
A torque wrench, yeah.
I had to drink 3 entire bottles of Soylent to work up the strength and get the protein to open my juice bottle.
It's never useful shit that gets automated. It's always just like creating stupid shit like this. Why is that?
Yeah.
Well,
I think, were we talking about that on... I was talking about that on
most episodes.
Stream.
Yeah.
So it's because we've got to that point of the fact that... everything is so small and everything is so efficient now that they have to just make up shit until like the next wave of CPUs or whatever to run your iPhone or computer comes out. So they're just making up like Fitbits that can track your this and that, or you can speak to your doorbell and open up a door and all this kind of thing. So
yeah,
they're making up shit while they're trying to get back into the manufacturing and the creative stages of things.
Yeah. I think the Silicon Valley thing, honestly, if the whole thing was just created, it'd be interesting. But then, again, you know, we wouldn't be able to record our little book review show. So,
well,
who's the real, I don't know, soy boy? Go on,
I think there's Silicon Valley, but there's also another place in China where... so Silicon Valley is, they kind of come up with these dumb ideas, but there's a place in China that is doing the same sort of thing, but they're having, it's basically a city where they can't even comprehend how many people are living there at the moment because it's so packed. Factoring side of it, like you can go into this, like shopping mall style thing, and they'll be selling everything from like the empty newly made iPhone boxes, so you can sell an iPhone like it's new. There's like thousands of people there soldering and putting together parts, and I think there's actually a company that's working there, or a few companies that are working there, where they're recruiting people and giving them these grants to be able to make like crazy things. Whereas Silicon Valley and places in America, you'd have to like work up and kind of get a resume and network with different people to get the same result. Whereas over in China, in a certain area, I can't think of the name of it now, but if you look up that sort of thing, it'll pop up.
Shenzhen.
Shenzhen, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically they're manufacturing and they're coming up with the ideas. So.
Mm. Yeah, it's a cul-de-sac, but I'll share just to lighten the mood a bit. Another game that I enjoyed playing with this book is following his music recommendations and like just chucking on whatever he was talking about in the book while I was reading it. So he went all the way, I don't know, the ones that I caught mainly were Death in June and Mozart, which is pretty good counterpoints. Did you guys catch any other music recommendations in it or?
Yeah, he opens the book talking about Tannhäuser. Tannhäuser's Overture.
Wagner,
I listened to that straight away as soon as I read that. I read the first paragraph, listened to Tannhäuser on YouTube, and then I went, got distracted by something pretty light, saw butterflies or whatever.
Well, I was going to say, on that note, we've got our regularly scheduled music break, but this time, lads, we're doing it live. So we're going to drop...
Yeah.
quickly. I'm going to play the drums.
I can bet one lemon that there was one sentence in the book that referenced a band that none of you could pick up, because I am the ultimate cool guy and I know all of the things cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Go on. What was it?
I remember you telling us about this.
Yeah.
It was, I can't remember what chapter it was, but it was at the end of a chapter. It said, I know things are going on tonight, but I don't bother. No, I don't bother.
Ooh.
And that's a reference to?
Danny Minogue.
Pissed Jeans.
Ah.
That's their name. And then
okay.
I'll have to look up what the actual
I know of Pissed Jeans because one of my mates who's into that sort of scene, he's recommended it to me, but I don't really have the time preference for music, let alone anything. So
I think it's False Jesse Part 2. And it's very jarring. It's kind of like the book.
Very jarring. I thought this was just a more jarring version of Franzen's, because I don't think Franzen's heavily into that whole Pine Tree Gang, something to do with substations bit, but a lot of the language within this book is sort of couched within the same sort of very always online type language that you see in modern day vernacular.
Yeah.
Or would come to expect, anyway.
Well, yeah, I thought that I'd share with our valued listeners a track that he, well, from an album that he references in the book, which is Death in Dunes, But What Ends When the Cymbals Shatter. And the track is The Mourner's Bench. So I'm going to try and make sure this works, but we'll see the rest of you in 2 minutes and 33 seconds.
Time for a cup of tea. Someone hold on me. Oh yes, it did. I said something got hold of me. It rattled around my head. Something got hold of me.
All right, and we're back. Or are we?
Yeah.
Ah, there we go. Very good. So what did you reckon? Let's give it a cheeky review. Death in June. I'm assuming you've heard of him before.
Mm-hmm.
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 Yep.
Yeah. Does the rounds in
your scene, I think. Yeah. Bit of neo-folk, never heard anyone.
Yeah, I like that kind of folk.
Yeah.
And I think one of you guys posted in the chat earlier, and it was him like screaming or something like that, and it had the flag behind him, like the green tree and the an appeal to heaven.
Yeah.
And I'd seen that before and thought, hey, like it must have just been going through my Instagram feed or whatever, like a few years ago. I'm like, hey, that's a cool flag. I like it. And I had no idea that was like Mike Marr or anything to do with him.
Right. Well, yeah, that's, I mean, it's, if you read the book without seeing the guy and you didn't know him from Vine or anything else, you would, I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, start shit with Mike Marr here, but I think you'd assume that he might be a bit of a basement dweller, you know, or a forest dweller, alternatively. He might have a little brown cabin somewhere, and that's just where he's at with his life. But
be mailing packages to Democrats.
Yeah, things like that, you know.
Redacted like packages.
And Republicans, and everyone Ted would have mailed.
Power stations.
He just mail everyone. Just don't use the mail.
And yet, he would... I remember him like talking about the mailman in like a positive way and giving him a wave and saying like hello in like one of the chapters.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of ironically funny. Yeah.
A little bit of a Ted K head nod.
Yeah.
So Sox in the chat has just pointed out, Mick, that the flag we're referencing has an eerie similarity to the flag of a certain small principality or, you know, island to the. Northeast of Australia. I don't know if you've heard of it. Norfolk Island? Yeah, I think that's how it's said.
It used to be east of Australia.
Oh, there you go.
North FC Island.
North.
North.
Fuck you, I'm from South FC.
Yeah, so the pine tree game thing, we could probably talk about that a little bit. Because I looked it up, I tried to check things out. I think a certain Mr. Boscovich would know more about this than us, so he'll probably be yelling at his podcast app right now. But did you guys know about it going into the book, or what? What's the deal?
I had no idea.
Right.
Neither. I found out after reading it and just doing a little bit of lurking online to better prepare. No idea.
Yeah, okay. What about you, Bronzo?
What are we talking about?
Pine tree gang.
Pine tree gang.
Fucking hell.
I think it just
got I knew about it. It was like a big thing on Twitter, like the pine tree stuff, and that some of it was like a little kind of spurgy. Some of it was in the right direction, but
well, that's why I chucked it in my bio, just because I like trees. I'm a little bit spurgy.
Yeah, that's all right. There's certainly like some environmentalist aspect of it is like a good thing.
I mean, I'd say that I'm fashionably ecological. Like I'm eco, eco fashion, eco. I don't know. I usually abbreviate it, but yeah,
eco fashionable.
Eco fashion.
Yeah, because I was like, I like trees. I like an appeal to heaven, and that sort of thing. So
heaven's good to appeal to.
Yeah, I think it's the way that Mars using it, though, is talking about a appeal against the lower world, the downwards pointed Earth, you know?
Yeah.
He's sort of calling back to our heroic aspirations. It's good shit. But yeah, Mike Marr doesn't look like he lives in his mum's basement. He looks like... he's been described, I think, in a Playboy review. He's like an 80s movie bully on downers. So he looks like he's got this kind of flop of, like, blonde hair. Very extremely online-looking guy, you know, very media-ready. But
when I saw him, I instantly thought of like a very old picture of an old Fallschirmjäger soldier from the Second World War, smoking a durry.
Aesthetic as fuck.
Like,
A Fallschirmjäger. Can we get a translate check? In the
It's a paratrooper.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Translate check in chat.
That's the song that they're not allowed to play on YouTube anymore because something happened in New Zealand.
So Pine Tree Gang, when I went and checked it out myself, I'm probably on another fucking list, but There's terrorist connotations. It's a listed organization, Pine Tree Gang, or PTG, to its friends in the States.
Is it on ADL? I was going to say ADL, or...
probably, I don't know. This might have been just, like, usual alphabet. I don't know. One of the alphabets. But, yeah, you can go and look it up for yourself and get on the same list. Maybe we'll end up in the same place.
Yeah, put a shirt or something and definitely get that shipped to your home address.
That's
Join
it.
Us in the Roots of the Right FEMA camp.
Well, he does. Mike Maher does have a merch shot. Yeah, yeah. Get that at the same time, in the same order. Yeah, with your own credit card. Yeah.
Full name, address.
Yeah.
And my Centrelink number, so they can charge it straight to Centrelink.
It's about where a lot of people are at the moment. We are talking in the age of the Corona-chan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm determined not to derail too much into Corona talk. But tightened the restrictions domestically again, so it's a miracle we're still allowed to stream, lads. It's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's right. That is a miracle. That is big news.
That'll work. When we get into that, though.
You're an essential service, though.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
e-boys and streamers are an essential service.
Yeah, yeah, e-boys. That's right. Essential. but yeah, it's pretty crazy now. They've changed the maximum gathering to two people in an area.
Yeah, I can't wait for them to change it to a maximum of one person in a social gathering.
Yeah, that would be epic. we're actually seeing some kind of pine tree ideas manifest, though. I'm not sure if you guys have seen. I know it turned out to be false, but these pictures of the waters in Venice clearing up and
Was that false?
Dolphins in the canal. No, the waters did clear up.
Right.
But there was a picture that was claimed there was dolphins in the canals.
Yeah.
And it was from a port down on the south coast. So.
But were the swans real? That's what I really need to know.
Apparently the swans come to that spot regularly. That's not a unique thing.
Wait, okay.
Are you talking about the drought in Venice?
No, pictures after the lockdowns in Italy, and they were saying that because of the lack of tourists, the canals have cleared out and there's far less pollution.
So stupid.
And blah, blah.
I'm still waiting to see pictures of the Yangtze River with all the thousands of bodies floating down.
It's just like pure blue.
Guys, the Ganges is the cleanest it's ever been.
Yeah. they're still burying people there. Never mind. It's actually gone worse.
To your stream, mate. Congratulations.
There he is. Just dropped in.
What's up, boys? How you doing?
Thomas, you want to do the intro for our guest here again?
Yeah, mate. For those of you who missed it before the break, we've got DJ of the Coming Collapse, the Thinking Man's Alec Jones, host of White Talk Radio, Mr. White Tuber. How's it going, mate?
I'm very good. I'm glad to be here. My throat sounds fucked up. I guess I woke up with something. I don't know.
He's got the coup.
Kick him straight away.
Yeah, mute the mic. No, it's good, man. Thanks so much for joining us. You are. Are you feeling okay? Feeling like you can make the show? You sound good.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I got some coffee and shit. It's like 7:30 in the morning. I was drunk as fuck last night, to be honest with you. I'm kind of hungover. But, get her fucking did.
Yeah, that's right. At least it's just a hangover and not Corona, so.
Yeah.
Corona over. Yeah.
If you just keep getting hungover, you'll never feel coronavirus. So there's a remedy.
You need to protect yourself.
That's right.
Yeah. It's like when you start coughing and you get worried and then you realize that you're a smoker and it's probably just cancer.
Which is a relief at that point.
Yeah. You're like, oh, that's okay.
Dude, I'm like a pack-a-day smoker myself, so I'm always fucking coughing the whole nine yards, sneezing, blowing my nose and shit, getting dirty looks. Fuck it, you know?
So that's the secret to the voice, man, because you got that serious, like, Alex Jones, Ted Kaczynski vibe. It's good.
Thank you. That's quite a compliment.
So do you want to talk a bit about what you do when you're not dropping in on lowly Australian streams?
What I do?
Yeah,
right now, I guess I have a bunch of kids, so I have to watch them. I have to work at night. It's been kind of a fucked up situation that I'm kind of in, getting kind of cucked a little bit. money's been super tight. I lost my job because of fucking daycare and shit. That's how I started getting to this, man.
Shit. You know?
Right. Yeah, the daycare was too fucking high. I had to fucking stay home. I lost my job. You know, daycare is calling and saying, your kid has a fucking runny nose. Your kid sneezed. Pick him up. Your kid had diarrhea. Pick him up. The job's like, fuck you. I got you go. You're picking him up all the time. And shit. It's like, yeah, dude, it was ugly, bro.
I did know that you actually have more kids than Abraham in the Bible. He had about 100, and I think you're topping that by about 20.
Something like that. We're getting close.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, shit.
God willing. Insala.
Yeah. So I've got to ask, Mr. White, did you read the book, or are you just here for the bands?
Nah, man. My head's spinning. It's been crazy. I haven't been able to even internet, really. You know, like, I hopped on for, I had a stream yesterday. That was, like, my only internet I did. It's been fucking crazy down here, man.
Shit, yeah. Do you want to...
So corona thing around.
Do you want to plug the stream just quickly, so while we got him?
Yeah, plug it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just check out my channel if you guys want. We got some good stuff. I put a thing here. White tuber. Yeah, I got an about section. I got a morning show and a Saturday show. And we have all kind of Wignat shit.
Yeah. Yeah, the morning show. Morning show's a trip. That's great.
Guys in chat, go and follow. The morning show is for, like, our Australian listeners. Like, the morning show is about 11:30 p.m. our time.
Around 11.
Mm.
Is it really?
Yeah. I always thank God for the daylight savings over there, because it would be, like, midnight when I'd see it. And you'd be like, all right, man, let's do this. We'll fucking go, Logan, do this and that and that.
Yeah.
Get all hyped up. And then I'm like, all right, I got to go to bed.
Yeah.
I'm pumped up for bed.
Oh,
you're,
man.
You're, like, about to go to bed and you're having, like, audio monster energy just strain straight in your ear.
That's a vibe. So we were just talking about Mike Barr's book, Harassment Architecture. And we're talking about the fact that he's been painted as part of the Pine Tree Gang, which has now been listed as a bit of a naughty organization. Some strange friends to have. So yeah, certainly the book is pretty fed posty in a sort of psychologically and thematically detached manner. So for Ma, you know, he talks about it as, like, I hear that a lot of arsonists get away with it and shit like that. And, like, black squares are his version of in Minecraft. So you can see the section... called 3 Feet on the Gas, which really dives into this. It's kind of a fever dream post-collapse. But interesting shit. I don't know. That's if you guys had the same takeaway.
Yeah. Like, he will... There's so many redacted... Like, it's funny that more wasn't redacted from the book.
Mm.
About certain people have... I hear that certain people have been good at... really good at blowing up power stations. I hear that this and that, and like, you go into detail, and then there was, like, just, like, little parts where it was like, I hear that bombing blank blank would be effective doing this. Like,
yeah. Mr. White Tube has just dropped in, man. You're welcome to all the lists we're on now, dude. You're welcome.
Yeah. Now, I'm just trying to work on the book myself a little bit. I found a link here, boys. Is this the book we're talking about? I'm going to throw in the chat real quick. It's like an audio version of it.
Yeah. There's the audio version, and we've shared another version. But yeah, that's it. That's the book.
It's nice. It's short and sweet as well. It's like a good listen while you're driving around or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. I reckon you should have done the audiobook there, man.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, if you give me an audiobook, dude, I would have been listening to that shit. You know, I could have. I've been as I went around, but sounds probably. I'll kick this in. You guys,
The fall of Rome and all that shit.
Yeah, I want the Mr. Whitetuber reading of Harassment Architecture.
Oh man, there's that bit. I can just imagine how excellent the his little Mike Myers digression into shouting about Sophie, who lives in New York. Does somebody else want to pick this up, or do you want to find it in the book?
Yeah, I've got a tab somewhere. He thinks about how writing in only lowercase would lure a new demographic into reading this book. Hello, Sophia from New York City. I see you as you open at random to specifically this page by total coincidence. It's not coincidence. In reality, I wanted you here in this obscure Manhattan bookshop that you kill time in until your friend says she's outside. Should I read the whole thing? It's like three pages.
No. Wow. That's good. I think we'll... Yeah. All right, you can do the... You know what? We can do the whole thing. It is funny. Yeah.
If you've come this far. We'll do the whole thing. We'll do a Bronzo reading of the of the paragraph. So
do it. Dramatic reading.
Outside.
Tonight, damn, this is some hardcore academics here. Are you boys in college and stuff?
I'm a graduate.
I'm a spur.
I mean, yeah, I went to college myself, boys. I got a little degree, and this is some academic. This is some heavy shit, boys, you're getting into. I'm, oh, shit, fellas. Yeah, you motherfuckers over here chat. God damn.
We're trying to save people from having to read.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
This is like reading Rainbow, but for midwits. It's good.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Midwit salute.
What was I up to there? When you walk home, I'll follow you and catch the main door to your apartment complex before it closes. Don't want to ask a stranger for the code. I'll watch you undress, only to stare disgusted at yourself in the $10 Walmart mirror your parents had shipped to you at your request. You can afford that, really? I'll watch you order takeout time and time again because you're far too busy to learn how to cook your own meals. Sophia, I'll watch you cry over shitty Netflix shows off to porn you found through extremely specific search terms. I'll watch you spend more of your parents' money on things in poor taste. You were stuck for a while, debating whether or not you could pull off fake designer or not. I saw that. You went with the real one, surprisingly. Not really surprising, it's your parents' money. Workout routine, which lasts all of exactly 5 minutes. I'll watch you lose a little more ambition. I'll watch you read listicles on BuzzFeed, the ones you share with your friends who don't actually click them when you send it.
You gotta emphasize when it goes into all caps though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that's this bit right. I'll actually skip to that bit. Sophia, you disgust me and your parents alike. Sophia, stop getting drunk and venting to bodega clerks. The one you've been frequenting as of late can't even speak English. He masturbates to you when he gets home. Sometimes he can't even wait that long and he'll cautiously start right there under the register when he thinks nobody's around. Sophia, you're going to get raped again if you keep drinking like you do in the places you go. Any thoughts?
That's... I love that it goes from the simple lowercase like BuzzFeed kind of thought to like warning her in all caps, like, stop doing this. You're gonna ruin your life.
I see you doing circles in the parking lot.
Yeah.
I see you sucking up Hajij.
Yeah, Hajij just following you.
I think Sophia is a microcosm for most modern women.
Maybe it's a stand-in. Yeah, I really wanted to. This is my third big brain take, guys, and I want to. This is maybe going to be an argument, or maybe just going to be a nod. But I thought, yeah, he's really heavy on women in this. But maybe that's part of a zeitgeist I was never part of. Like maybe that's part of an issue that I never really was on the receiving end of. Because he just goes hard time and time again. You know, he's really struggled obviously with this. I don't know if you guys found the same thing, because some of it for me was like hard to read.
I find it easy. I love that shit.
Honestly, he's not the hardest person on women I know.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It is kind of hard, but like if you know guys out there that are actually looking for like families and traditional this and that and wanting to raise kids or whatever, you can see them like doing this like almost double take where it's like all women are whores, they're trying to sell their body and all this. Like I'm trying to look for they're not doing the far retarded like poll thing where they're saying like I want a virgin with no tattoos with blonde eyes and blonde eyes
and blue hair. Yeah
blonde eyes and blue hair.
Blue haired ones, none of that blonde eyed bit.
But yeah, there's plenty of guys that are out there that I think they're moving up in the conservative movement where it's kind of they want this ideal and it's kind of been it's been brought to them from I guess looking at it as a traditional point as well as them being coomers and looking at too much porn thinking of the ideal woman sort of thing.
Yeah that's the thing is like, and we talked about this the other night on the other stream we were on Oz, which is that this is not like this like being mean to women or like deriding women online is like not only funny, it actually does have utility as well. And the utility is in reorienting the perspective of men, because what we've done is we've moved away from men in a position of authority, and now we've got men like iDubbbz, whose girlfriend decides to start an OnlyFans, and he goes, well, I'm fine with it, guys, and if you don't think that's cool, then you must be a stupid nerd. And it's like, we need to give men the power to say, and not to necessarily tell their wife they hate them. That's not what we want. But what we are doing is like pushing the boundary where we can start bringing some authority back into the realm of males.
Yeah.
Bullying women's a public service.
Short but sweet.
Yeah. We had a question.
And I mean, think about it.
No, go on.
Go on.
Well, I was saying, if you think about it, like women, their bodies are essentially the foundation of your household. Their body, the foundation. That's the one thing you and all the kids have in common, right? So they're that foundation. And when you got a rotten fucking foundation, everything above it is going to be shit. So that's exactly what they're doing. They're attacking us at the foundational level.
Mm.
So every house that we build, it's always collapsing on itself. 50% divorce rate. You understand? Shit. A woman's virtue, her purity, her virtue is that foundation. And when that's fucking cracked, no wonder the thing falls, you know? That's why they're always going straight for a woman.
Metaphor. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. And I think that's not something that we can fix by aiming messages at women and saying, like, women, you need to be better. We need to aim our messages at men and say, men, you need to expect your women to be better.
Yeah.
100%.
JLP, Jesse Lee Peterson kind of talks about that a little bit, where he's like, men are the slut makers.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, no, he's right, yeah. You're the one fucking boys, you know?
Yeah, you're the ones that are going out and fucking around and making these whores.
Because they've got that lizard brain sort of sentimentality.
Or watching the shit, right, and with the like 4 or 5 subscriptions on fucking OnlyFans or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Like somebody's paying for it, right? Somebody fucking pays for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And it's mostly probably, you know,
somebody's probably doing the fapping.
Somebody's doing the fapping. Yeah, that's right.
Who's fapping?
There was a video. There was a video recently. I can't remember who uploaded it, but it was going over the whole like OnlyFans thing. And if you just type in OnlyFans into YouTube, you'll get thousands of results. And this one girl was talking about how she opened OnlyFans for like 3 days.
Mm.
And there was one guy that was paying like $200 to just see pictures of her feet. Like, wow. Not face, not anything like that.
Yeah.
Still, man, that was like the easiest $200 I've ever made. So.
you have to take that tax deduction to like get your look,
the big line's going down, man. Big line's going down. Yeah, fucking big line. I caught your show the other morning, Mr. White. Just on this note, I really enjoyed your chat about us all being really excited to go into another war and being really keen to to die for the big line to go up. Yeah, fucking die. That's great. Yeah. Yeah,
I tried to send to Venezuela, but apparently we got a little update. Apparently the Chinese and the Russians sent a couple of stealth fighter jets down there. So that whole idea is out the window now, boys. And unfortunately, this time around.
Damn. Like, you know,
shit.
Money tied up down there that if they got rid of that guy, they'll never see that money again. That trillion or so. So, there you have it.
We had a question before before our little music break as well. So Mike Marr references this shade of blue. He's quite the fashion critic, and he references this shade of blue that he sees a lot of guys wearing, and he calls it retard blue. We were trying to figure out what retard blue is. What do you think it is?
Me?
Yeah.
It sounds like some retarded blue shit. I don't know.
The standard blue you'd get on any business shirt. So we were guessing light blue.
Yeah, we were guessing light blue. Yeah.
But apparently he's been seen wearing it, so what's the deal there? Do we have a Ben Shapiro gotcha on it?
I think it could be like the like a very much almost navy blue.
Hmm.
That doesn't work with anything.
So to grab the wheel and jerk it to the right on this pass, he also talks about this, and I totally agree with this quote, right? So this is from I think page 120, if you want to follow along. But he says, quote, "That was the day I looked into building a killer home gym, and build a killer home gym I soon did. No man should ever have to conform to the standards of some Planet Fitness or otherwise. Our space is ours. Screaming makes you lift more. The science to prove this is there, if you feel like this investigating." I thought that was big if true in the age of Corona. I mean, I'm getting soundproofing foam and a bench now.
So. I'll send you a link after this. There's this guy, Eric Boogs.
Right. He screams?
He used to do videos like of him lifting like ridiculous amounts of weight. I think he's in like some of the WWE stuff now.
Okay.
But like he would just be like screaming, like have like heavy metal playing and lift like ridiculous weights with weird different deadlifts and like crazy things. And he would always like scream into the mic, like, "It's a fucking mindset, baby. Like, it's a fucking mindset. I tried that before and I failed. Guess what? I tried it again. I did it. 200 pounds. Like, he's like a fucking legend with that sort of thing. So that's my aim. And it's always been my aim to build a basement gym. Or a gym anywhere, so I can just scream and lift weights.
Yeah. I want a deadlift platform overlooking my estate, like just a big sweeping field. You can see my fields of sheep and cattle, cotton. Yeah, why not chuck it in there? You know, my fountain, whatever the fuck else. Ben
Shapiro on the wall, and I'm gonna lift hard.
Yeah, that'll make you mad.
It's funny because
the only thing I'm gonna counter signal here is the soundproofing. You should actually be getting enlivening equipment, especially
on this. Get a microphone attached to yourself.
Just a megaphone helmet, like. Yeah.
Home gym has kind of been like a personal goal for a while, ever since my local one got overtaken by fighting age Chinese male students. He had some interesting insight in the Chinese, actually. I thought there was some pretty hot takes.
And I have been saying this, the same sort of thing, for about 3 years now.
This one,
they're like speedrunners.
Yeah, this one got me.
They take.
Oh yeah, like the whole thing that he was talking about. I was like, yeah, I've been saying this for quite a while, and like when I try to explain it, people are like, oh yeah, you're.
Have you got a quote lined up? Because I think I had exactly the same bit. The same things though. Sorry, Oz, go on.
No, I don't have a quote lined up, but like what you were referencing, yeah, I was saying like, yeah, I've felt that way for a long time. Like I've been to China. I've been to Beijing, and I can understand where he's coming from with that sort of mentality.
Mm.
I'm trying to find what it is in the book.
Well, he talks about the kind of Chinese mindset as being akin to a gamer who's done everything in GTA 5 and tries to clip through the bottom of the map. Like, they can't just leave well enough alone.
There's speedrunners, and they're going to put a new moon into space because of the sake of having a new moon in space, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome, though, isn't it? Like... just putting a new moon in space is kind of sick.
We landed on the moon just for the sake of landing on the moon, right? It wasn't, you know, any actual endeavor behind doing
it. Wait,
this man-made moon blow up planets, though?
Maybe.
That would be based. That would be so based.
It was also to mug the Russians, Mick. So.
We could blow up Saturn. We could finally blow up Saturn.
Yeah.
If anyone knows anything about Saturn.
I think it might have been on one of the early...
That's our nationalism.
It might have been on one of the early Janny streams where I wasn't too coherent because of certain substances, but I mean that I feel as though Chinese have evolved differently from us because of like the 100 years of communism that they've been around and the whatever 100 years of them just deleting the best man that they could. They've kind of, it's almost like you put two different species on different islands that were originally bred from the same thing, but giving them different environments to grow up in.
Mm.
And that's my feeling about the Chinese.
Two different survival strategies, right? They've got the chicken survival strategy, whereas, you know, the chickens have evolved to produce thousands of eggs and, like, content for humans to consume, and that's an evolutionary strategy. Even if they get sent to a factory and die an early death, there's plenty of chickens in the world. Mm. But it's I would liken the Chinese to cane toads, just because it's an excellent Australian idiom for a particular.
You light them on fire and hit them with a golf
club. Oh yeah, you freeze them in liquid nitrogen, hit them with a golf club, and they shatter into a trillion pieces. Yeah.
I've heard you can do that. I've heard.
You can do that.
I've heard that carbon dioxide. The new Minecraft update.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a different sort of survival strategy, and there's a lot of a lot of nuance in what goes on inside the brain of a Chinese people. And for Mike to come out and say that he can't figure them out is, well, I think apt. It's, they are difficult to figure out. They're like autism taking to its logical conclusion.
And they do have a hive mind, like Null 2 said. They have a hive mind like a motherfucker. You know, that's why time isn't perfectly for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's whatever is the hot topic of the day. It's not necessarily like full-blown communism. I mean, Marx is probably
not. Oh, not at all. Yeah, not anymore.
No. It's,
but they do like actually have a hive mind. Like, that's not even like an analogy, or that's not even an exaggeration. Like,
it's literal.
These people actually, like, they have a hive mind in the sense that they're like ridiculously highly collectivist, and this is understood in things like, look at things like the way marketing occurs in different countries, and like marketers understand that Asians are highly collectivist, like basically that they have a hive mind, because it's collectivism beyond what we could ever imagine or hope or dream for. It really is like they are bug people. They are bug hive.
Well, yeah, they evolved that way, man. They've always had empires. They're one of the only places on Earth that's literally always had an empire. Look at Europe. It's always a bunch of small city states and kingdoms fighting each other over there since fucking, what, 4,000 BC. They've had emperors.
Yeah.
And they live under all powerful emperor since forever. You know, no one else has done that. That's where you get that fucking shit.
Yeah.
That explains why they're still writing caveman fucking drawings. They don't even have a fucking alphabet. They didn't need an alphabet. You know, they had an emperor. You know?
That's true. Yeah.
We don't need alphabet. We have emperor.
Right. And then we had to do it. That's good.
They also have been like perpetually at conflict with themselves for like forever. And now there's a unified China. And I think Napoleon once said that, let China sleep, for pray that, you know, when she wakes, she will shake the foundations of the world. And now there is a united China, and it has a common goal in mind, and that is to colonize Australia and Africa and strip all the cobalt and uranium.
And guys, you know, the most powerful country during the American Revolution, the most powerful country in the world at that time was China.
Yeah, shit.
They were the most powerful country in the world until the opium hit, and now they're coming back up.
This has been a concern for Australians of antiquity as well, as we've like highlighted before in previous texts that we've covered, Peter Cochrane's work. That you know, the British Empire kind of was like, nah, it's a nothing burger, it's on the other side of the world, and we need to just, you know, like keep sailing around and trading spice in India and Hong Kong and the likes, and we're over here just very nervous, awaiting for China to awaken and send about 5% of their surplus population over here and destroy us.
You're fucking done. You're done, buddy. You're fucking done.
That's an interesting thing about China as well, because it's like, you think about them as being, you know, bug people, and they're all very little and stuff like that. But just to give you some context, on they are actually people. Just go to the Wikipedia page of just look up list of Chinese wars and battles, and just scroll down that and see how long it goes for, see how many years covered by Chinese war. These people are at war. Yeah,
they were at war themselves in their little different kingdoms before they were a united China for forever. Before, exactly. before anything was invented, they were fucking at war. We were still like hunting mammoths, and they were like,
yeah, and they have 10,000 fucking soldiers on each side. You know, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, they accidentally stumbled across gunpowder one day and realized how useful it could be.
Gunpowder, 10,000 guys, and we're in cave fucking world.
Putting two chopsticks together and some of them.
It's also not a good sign now that they have some ridiculous number of like, difference between male and female population. Like, I think they have like 100 billion excess males or something.
That was the one child policy.
Yeah.
And if they had a baby girl, they would go and drown them in a river because
that's right.
Basically women were,
women gay.
Unless you had four sons and then maybe one daughter, then it would be useful because you could, trade her off to like a rich other family or whatever. But if your first child was a woman, it would just go straight in a river.
Yeah.
So they could have that other one child, like the male child, that could go and work in the sweatshop and make Nikes for fat seppos to buy for like 10,000 markup.
Fuck.
I was just trying to create the Sam Hyde utopia. Do you guys know that?
Yeah. Male only utopia, yeah.
The Guy Heaven gym.
If that left you feeling a bit depressed, though, Mike Marr actually figured out the reason for the depression crisis. So we've solved it, guys. It's all really good. He said that anti-beauty and the scourge of ugliness in modernity was behind the depression crisis. I reckon I'd agree with that. That's a pretty big agree from me. Talks about the fact that, you know, ain't a lot around that's truly beautiful anymore. I don't know how you guys felt about it.
Yeah, it's probably just a tine on the multi-forked attack that is, you know, like Western civilization at the under the command of Jewish interests. But yeah, nothing is pretty anymore. And you look at modern art, and that's probably like the easiest example that comes to mind, right?
Yeah, I try not to, but yeah, I see where you're going.
Yeah, try not to look at it in general because it's fucked. But that right there is, that's the sort of standard they're holding art to these days, rather than, you know, you go to look at the Palace of Versailles, for example, or
real art,
the works of antiquity, and you just, it pales in comparison to new shit, like Pollock shitting himself onto a blank canvas and hanging it on a wall.
Yeah, that was kind of a bit leading into, I guess, the final take and something we can dive in. So I reckon throwing a cat amongst the pigeons with this, I don't know whether Mike Marr, that he's sort of a genius, or is he just like a grandiose narcissist? Or is he a genuine victim of the downward-pointed lower world clashing with the noble blood of the artist and an aesthete? I don't know. Maybe the readers will have to decide for this one. But there's a quote from the book I thought we'd finish on. And then we can have a chat too about the like final, I guess, hyper-real scenes in Minecraft where he joins some friends in the forest. But the final quote that I had was, today... Today we swear it to ourselves that tomorrow should be wounded. Even just a little bit. If every day you take your hardiest swing at the world, you've done your job. Some of us will go for its ankles, its knees, or its stomach. Some of us will go straight for the neck. I think he meant to say eyes. The neck or the heart. Either way, it's all more than anyone else will ever do. It's today that you have accepted that you, yourself, are an engine of chaos. An accelerationist. You architect harassment. Yeah. So there's that, and that coupled with the last little, you know, chapter, a bit of the book, where he talks about gathering together with some friends after... you know, causing a multi-car pileup and doing something terrible with a power station in Minecraft. And they end up in the woods together.
Redacted.
Was it Minecraft or was it a dream?
Yeah. Or was the real acceleration the friends we made along the way? I don't know what you guys thought about the ending. Yeah. What did you think about the final bit?
I think it was kind of just a whole culmination of swinging between realism and being sleep deprived for 6 days. And I think it was more just a poetic ending rather than ending it on something like, oh, we should bomb the something or other. Like, it was kind of just a back and forth between like throughout the whole book. It was sleep deprivation, dreamlike state, liquidity, and all of that. And I think it kind of summed up in the last chapter with that, where it was kind of where he wanted to go and maybe where he thought things were going and that sort of thing. That was kind of my take from it.
I thought it was pretty melancholic and kind of black-pilled and sometimes a bit down in the dumps, but overall it's a pretty good read for a lot of Zoomers. A bit Fed-posty as well, for my liking. But
like I said,
that's ultimately, if you're a really principled Fed-post or a white pill, because it's a lot like the endings we saw in both Evola and BAP, where he says there's going to be a small group of extremely based guys who are all of the lads, and we're going to make it.
Everything's going to we're all going to make it. It's all going
to
be
okay. We're going to make it, Kings. Similar
to both of those endings, in that the ultimate conclusion he draws is that sooner or later there will be a collapse, and you can link arms with the lads and rebuild later.
With the boys!
Yeah.
It was very Fed-posty and that sort of thing, but I could... Like, I don't know, maybe I'm just like the weird retard of the group, but
no, that job's taken.
I can definitely see that sort of stuff in things that I've thought, but not like, there's always things that you think of that are absolutely crazy at the time, and it just like flashes into your mind for a second, like, what if I just do redacted? And then you look back on it, you're like, oh, that was crazy. Or like, but people that have worked that, like, that job where you get up at 5 a.m., 4:30 a.m., and you're driving to that job, and you just think about these crazy things on the way to work or whatever. It doesn't actually go into, like, serious thought or anything like that, but there's always these flashes of what I've seen in the book where he's written out these flashes of, well, maybe if I do this, and then it's completely washed away with, I'm sitting in a diner at Applebee's, you know, like,
yeah.
Holding the blunt butter knife.
Yeah.
And,
we had
at some bloke across the table with contempt.
That was a good scene. That was a good scene.
Tyler Durden posting or Patrick Bateman posting.
Yeah, Alex posted.
Fly the blimp.
So we usually have a section on the show as well. I don't know if you've listened to us before, Mr. White, but we got a call to action. We tell people what to do. It's pretty good. So this one, what you need to do is get some fertilizer. You need nitrogen. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
No, the
call to action this time is just... survive the fucking Corona Chan. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to fucking do.
That's it. I was going to ask Mr. White, I don't know, how long have we got left? How long about the collapse? What do you reckon?
Until the collapse?
Yeah, why not? When do you reckon? Like next Thursday? Or
We're in it.
I'm thinking maybe around Easter. Around there.
That's just too quick, I reckon. I mean, if you look at the collapse of empires in the past... It takes hundreds
good
of years.
Good Friday.
Hey, we're collapsing on Good Friday, we're rising again on Monday.
Give me those palm leaves, boys.
We only need 3 days clean up.
That's it.
Yeah, by Monday, we're going to have all of those Greek temples built just like he was talking about. Yeah. 1 week in, we've got it.
Amazing.
Rome wasn't built in a day, but, you know, it's amazing what you can do with modern-day Kubotas and...
But like, real talk though, guys, the shit's getting in unknown territory, and you need to prepare yourselves. Like, everyone over here is preparing themselves. We have low IQ motherfuckers who are going to get instigated with this fake ass fucking virus shit, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
You never know, man. You're seeing it.
It's not so fake in the US, though. It's huge. It seemed like 20,000 cases per day. You know, here it's a slow trickle, but everybody's taking the precautions that are necessary, like keeping away from each other and not doing anything. Like tonight, I was baffled on my way home from work. There was not a car on the road in the middle of town. And I was like, wow, this is insane.
Yeah, over here, we've only got a few thousand cases, but everyone's already shutting down. Whereas in the US, they've got tens of thousands. There's still people on Twitter saying, it's
just a flu, bro.
They're all the sedum as well, which is kind of
flu, bro.
Yeah, just a flu, bro.
They're all Hasidim as well, and like, you know, heaps of.
Like, I'm straight up, bro. If I get that shit, I get that shit. God decides when I fucking go. It's not up to me. That's it. You know.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. That's very based. That's very traditionalist.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He made the virus. He'll fucking decide who gets it. That's it.
You know? That's right. We're in God's hands.
You go up to heaven and God's Chinese. He's speaking to you in like Cantonese. You're like, fuck.
He just tries to send Chinese to hell. What?
You know? He's like, I heard your podcast. And I was
yeah. Not very impressed.
Yeah, yeah, he'd be stoked. He'd be stoked.
Yeah, it's like that meme. It's like, what if you got to heaven, but then God was like, "Ching chong."
Then you must be in hell.
Yeah,
that's right.
You must be in hell. Exactly.
So everyone's got enough toilet paper, though, right? You guys will be okay.
We got more ammunition than toilet paper, but all right.
Wipe your ass with.
Yeah, we're not allowed that down here.
Wipe your ass with the 5.56. We're good.
Load it up, and it's a bioweapon.
Hell yeah!
Bioweapon.
You can give people Jardia with it.
It's like those German shepherds that the Nazis used with the envenomed fangs in the Second World War to chase Jews.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
I heard that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got some exciting stuff, but I can't believe we've been, you know, orbiting around like 50 people watching this thing for a while. So thanks, everyone, for that. It's been incredible.
Number four, boys.
Yeah, number three, four on the front. It's very exciting. So
bro,
thanks
you got
to
like
all
75% of your followers watching. That's like high numbers, bro.
Yeah, that's good. It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We've got 69 followers.
And we were even ahead of my boy Jimbo Zuma. Follow Jimbo Zuma if you don't. He has great late night streams if you're an insomniac.
So basically, if you're listening now, follow his stream.
Yeah. But don't leave.
And as Mr. Whitetuber knows, Jimbo is carrying the white race. Isn't that right?
For hours, as back.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nuts. So yeah, I'm sure people knew where to find us this time, but you can just find us by searching for us on Spreaker or Spotify or wherever else you get your podcasts.
There are DLive sidebar has been fucking up for like the last few days, so it's pretty like, I guess, like we kind of sent out the link to, like, I jewed out the link to everyone that I knew. Sidebar's been kind of off and on. Maybe they're transferring it to the, it's because they're transferring it to the other thing, or maybe China's being shut down. Yeah, we don't know, but
now that we've had another celebrity guest, I feel like that usually sets us up pretty well. So
who's that?
So we're also on Twitter, at least for now, at RootsRight, and we're on Telegram, so you can search for us there and you can join our discussion too. And on our next episode, I'm pretty sure, about 90%, depending on the way that this thing goes and whether or not it really kicks on Good Friday, we're going to be joined by Borzoi Boskovic, again, of TRS. We're going to be covering...
Oh, shit.
Yeah. We're going to be covering...
That's fuck!
We're going to be covering...
We're whistling our way into the DMs.
Yeah. You just slid into and asked him. He was pretty good. So we're going to be covering Carl Schmitt's The Concept of the Political. And I'm sure that Borzoi will mug us all again into the ground as we learn just how illusory and homosexual politics really is. So, yeah. That's the closing words from me. Do you guys have anything else?
Yeah, I want to say monkeys in chat. We got monkeys in chat.
We got monkeys forever.
Monkeys.
Yeah, post monkeys.
Have you got any Slaters? Can you post Slaters?
Oh, before you go as well, you know about the whole chest distributing thing at all?
No. No, I have no idea.
You have to like click on the chest and then hit distribute if there's enough in there.
All right, here we go. I'm going to do it. But yeah, and I'll take this chance too. Miss WhiteTuber, thank you so much. It's been incredible. Everyone, immediately go over to his channel and subscribe, follow.
Yeah.
You know, throw some lemons at him.
I appreciate you guys inviting me on to hang out. I love hanging out with the boys, man. Anytime I can do it, I'm free. I always say yes. You know, because I love our people and I love what we're doing here, boys. And we got to support each other. We have no choice at this point, you know?
That's true. That's true.
Maybe, like, I'm just going to fanboy out a little bit here and say that, like, seeing your stuff where it's like 1 hour, you've got it all prepped up and you go for it and it's done in an hour. Like that's how lazy a lot of other streamers are. I'm not going anywhere with it, but I'm just saying like, it's very impressive to see you put out all that content like every day. And it's great to see, like, even though it's at, like, 11 p.m. at night, I really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, I treat it like a job, boys. You know, I treat like I got other shit I have to do, but this is very important to me. You know, we take the struggle very seriously, you know, because I have fucking kids, boys, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and let my fucking country, my people be fucking destroyed, you know?
Mm.
So, hell yeah, man.
We got to do
100%. Hell yeah. Yeah, I'm in the same boat without giving away any detail, but I feel exactly the same way, and that's why we spend, you know, if you added up all the hours of this show, it'd be pretty, pretty big right now. We've been working on it pretty hard, and it's part of it is just trying to get some legs underneath people, you know, get some, some ideological backing.
Yeah. Get some more Aussies on this.
More Aussies doing
content. Yeah, for real. Where the Aussies at, man?
Yeah. There's a few. There's a few around. There were some really, really great ones out there. You know, sure they wouldn't mind. Most of us caught up out of a podcast down here called The Absolute State, which was fantastic. And unfortunately, you know, F's in the chat, but we're bringing it back up.
Hell yeah. We're starting it again. We're kicking off again. So yeah, I'd say definitely go chat, go sub to Mr. WhiteTuber. It's a great show. And thank you for coming on, of course, bud. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I hope invite me on again, man. I would definitely maybe I can be here on time next time.
Hey, no, of course.
Not as hungover and shit.
Welcome, of course.
I would just have to, vice versa, dude. If you ever want somebody to come and shit up your show, then get in touch with one of us.
Yeah, we got White Talk Live, and we usually like to have a guest on there. If you guys want to, it may take a few weeks. We got a bunch of guests lined up right now, but if you guys want to come hang out with us on that, you know, we can make that work. Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Nice. Nice.
And next week, we got another great guest chat for White Talk Live on Saturday at 6. Can't tell you who. It's always a surprise. You never know who's going to be. But he's a big D-liver. He's bigger than me. I try to find guys who are even bigger than me, you know, and try to get this whole thing going. And he's a big D-liver. You've heard of him. Yeah.
After the episode.
Yeah, shit. All right, nice. Well, yeah, everyone go subscribe to Mr. WhiteTuber and the channel. I'll definitely catch that episode because I'm keen to see the guests.
Oh, but we had Larry Ridgway last night, boys. You know who he is?
Yeah, that was good. I watched that. That was a good app.
Ooh.
King of Wignats.
Yeah. The master Wignat.
The drunken king of Wignat. Love him.
Oh, shit. This has been great, guys. So, read books, look after yourself, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Grow some tomatoes.
Yeah, do that. Do that, too.
JN King, salute.
I love you.
Cheers, everyone.